everyone. Welcome to the Christian Rocketeers podcast, where we teach you how to rocket your nonprofit to the next level. I'm your host, Shawnee Pinkasek, and today I have my wonderful friend, Sarah Nicole Nadler, with me. Sarah is coming to us from beautiful Kansas, where she recently bought a farm. So, Sarah, what brought you to go from city life to farm country?
Good question. So I've actually been a farm girl my whole life. I'm definitely more country than I am city. But when I was in my early 20s, I moved to Los Angeles and started working for another nonprofit. And at that time, it was the perfect fit for me. I really loved what I was doing. But the time came when I was like, okay, I'm done with city life. I'm ready to get out in the country again. I grew up in Colorado in the mountains. So like I said, definitely more country. This is more like going back to my roots than anything else.
Come back to your roots. That's awesome. And you have such a beautiful farm that you and Ben have built there. For those who don't know you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your husband, and kind of what you guys do together?
Sure. So my name is Sarah Nicole Nadler. Like Shawnee said, I am a licensed financial advisor. I work with business owners and help them escape the worker bee lifestyle and become financially free. And I also am the very proud owner of a charitable organization called MATCH. MATCH stands for Making Advocacy the Force for Change in Human Rights. And I can tell you the story of how I got into that. But essentially what we do at MATCH is we take our free human rights curriculum, which is sponsored by Youth for Human Rights, and we bring it into schools, churches, community groups, and we educate youth on how to stand up for their human rights without violence. So most of these kids, in fact, most adults can't name their 30 basic human rights. Mm-hmm. So first we teach them what those rights are. And then once they know what they are, as you've seen in recent history, it's important to know how to stand up for your rights without rioting and bashing your neighbors' homes and businesses. So we give them tools to actually create change without violence.
Yeah, because violence gets us nowhere. I think of the cities that get destroyed with people being angry and upset that they feel no power, but really the violence just breeds more violence. It's the peaceable actions that what you do with your organization that helps bring about that change. So when you started your nonprofit, where did that inspiration come from?
So it was early 2017. I don't know if you remember, but at that time, there were a lot of riots around the U.S., just like there have been recently. And at that time, it was because of the shooting by a white cop in Texas of a young Black youth. And I, being a person of privilege, I grew up in a wealthy American family. I am white, or at least I look very white. I am actually Hispanic, but that's irrelevant, right? In terms of privilege, I appear white, and that's the kind of privilege that I am given. And so I felt a need at that time, seeing what was going on around me, to raise my voice and say something. And I was powerless. I was a waitress at the time, getting myself through school by, just odd jobs and whatnot. And I didn't feel like I had any ability to speak up for people around me or, the human rights violations that I was seeing. And so I decided that the one skill I did have was storytelling. I am a published author now. At the time I was not. I had just one book published at that time. And I decided to write a second book. And it was a book about racism and how unfounded it is. And I wanted to make it a very acceptable book, right? I'm not a person of color, so I didn't want to try to tell the story of a person of color. So instead, I told the story of a young white girl who is kidnapped by space aliens. And along with her, they take a sampling of all of the, the flavors of human, right? In order to sell these humans, they take one child of every race on human Earth, right? And they take all these children and they go to sell them. And so it's a story about human trafficking, but it's told in a very funny, fun way that kids can kind of enjoy. It is a steampunk fantasy story. And there's an undercurrent throughout the story where we find that, one type of human is not any better or different than another, right? And all of the kids who are taken, despite the fact that they are different colors, they're different ages, they all end up having intrinsic value to, you know, to share, and they band together as a team despite their differences and their various things that they've been taught about each other and how to think about each other. They end up having to come together in order to defeat the space demons, right? These space pirates. And so this was just a fun story that I wrote. I published it in, I think it was early 2018. And I really didn't know if it was going to go anywhere. I thought, you know, this is just my way of doing something, probably a little drop in the bucket, but it's something. And mm-hmm. I sent it out to my readership and it exploded, Shawnee. It exploded. And ironically, it did not explode here in the United States. It actually exploded worldwide. And I found myself being barraged by readers in various different countries, particularly in African countries, asking for copies of the book, asking for the next book, and expressing to me how much the message of that book meant to them.
Yeah.
And so that was when I connected with Youth for Human Rights, and I learned all about the free curriculum that they give. They have booklets, they have, you know, curriculum for teachers and educators to bring into schools. They have video PSAs about all of the 30 different human rights. And I was so amazed by their curriculum that I decided to create my own nonprofit to push the message of Space Patrol and Youth for Human Rights using their curriculum. So I would go into schools, and I started out with going into homeless shelters where there were young kids. And I would read to them aloud from my book, and I would dress up, and Ben would come with me, my husband, he would dress up as one of the space pirates, right? And we would bring our space guns and all these things, and we would act it out. And we would talk about the different human rights that were being violated in the book and what the kids do to overcome those violations. So it's really good because, Shawnee, in the book, they start out by trying to use violence to solve the problem, and it doesn't solve the problem. So I think it's a good way to educate kids through storytelling.
And it's told in a way that kids can relate with space. I know my kids love space, and obviously Karen and I do as well, because you know the name. So, I mean, people can relate to that. So do you have plans to write another sequel to that book? Like, did you write a second one to the Space Pirates, or did you just let that be a standalone?
You know, it's funny you say that, because yes, I totally want to write a sequel, and I've been meaning to for years. But as I said, this nonprofit kind of took on a life of its own. We now have a presence in 13 countries, and funding that and organizing that and making sure our volunteers have the curriculum and have a copy of the book, the one book I did write, you know, that has kind of occupied so much of my time that I haven't really sat down to write the next book. So I do intend to someday.
Not to mention you don't have enough hands with, you know, business and, you know, to do everything we do. We really need to duplicate Sarah and just have, you know, clones of her so she can run around and do everything she needs to do. So what has been your biggest struggle? You know, you mentioned that you've expanded to 13 countries. You've got to get this material out to all these people. What's been the biggest struggle in that? Has it been funding, or is it in the beginning stages, was it the overwhelm? What was your biggest obstacle that you feel?
That's such a good question. So in the beginning, like I said, I published the book in 2018. That's also the year I graduated, and I went out and got my first corporate job as a business consultant. So I had gone back to school to get my degree. I, you know, got a job in this prestigious consulting firm, and I consulted for a year. And during that year, that same year is when I published the book and everything started to explode. So my life was obviously very busy. I was working full time as a business consultant and also starting this nonprofit on the side. And I did close to 300 hours of volunteer work in the community that year alone. So you can imagine how my life looked that year. It was a little bit crazy. But what's interesting was the first struggle I really ran into, as you mentioned, was fundraising. I had no idea how to fundraise. I was really struggling to get donations from anybody except my friends and family. I didn't know how to write a grant. I didn't know how to really do this. And so what I did was, after a year, I went to my boss and said, hey, you know, I have this wonderful nonprofit. Would you be willing to make a donation? And they said, no. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right, well, would you be willing to give me a raise? I've worked here successfully for a year. I had turned 5 of my clients into million-dollar business owners in that year. So I definitely had, you know, the stats to back it up. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd like to have a raise so that I can continue my work and at least I'll be able to fund this nonprofit more myself. And they said, no. So I actually ended up quitting my job at that point and going out and starting my own online business. So that, I would say, was my biggest struggle, was finding support in the beginning. And luckily I found a way to overcome that, but it was a huge struggle in the beginning, was finding reliable volunteers and finding funding.
So what advice would you give someone in looking for volunteers? What qualities would you look for a volunteer to come alongside you?
So the first thing I will say is mission is obviously the most important thing. You don't want to find a volunteer who's just like, oh, I have nothing better to do, right? You want to find volunteers who are just as passionate about the work that you do as you are, because that passion is what's going to keep them motivated, right? We get letters from our kids all the time. We get pictures sent to us from volunteers all around the world. And when my team sees those photos and they read those letters, that's when they double down, right? That's when they go, okay, my own first world problems, I'm going to put those aside and keep helping, because these kids, they have bigger problems than we do in a lot of instances, right? So I think that that's the most important thing, is making sure that your volunteers are on the same page in terms of their passion for the work that you do and their desire to see your mission come to fruition.
Yeah. And seeing that change, I know with us at Mercy's Light, it's seeing the change in the girls and seeing where they come from and then where they are today, and just seeing that light come in their eyes. And like Carrie has said, they look younger when they're with us for a period of time. They go from looking older to actually starting to look their age, which is incredible, because, you know, you see the trauma and stuff that they've been through, and it's just heartbreaking, but it's amazing to see the life change. Do you have a story that has stood out to you in your nonprofit journey? Is a story of a child or someone that you've helped that is, you keep in front of you as like, this is why I keep going?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the first things that I became aware of once I started doing all this work, because you have to remember, right, I grew up very privileged. I was in a fairly wealthy American family. Even my nonprofit work in Los Angeles, I had been exposed to, you know, drug addiction and gangs, but not really the darker parts of that. I was usually meeting people who were ready to come out of those situations, and I was helping them get out of them. So when I started this work in Africa, it was the first time I really realized the depth of evil that exists on this planet, right? And really had to confront and face that for the first time. And I remember one of my volunteers in Africa, in Sierra Leone, actually, which is the 5th most impoverished country in the world, he reached out to me saying, hey, we found this girl. She was wandering the streets trying to sell cornflakes. And we stopped her. You know, she's obviously young enough. She should have been in school. We asked her what was happening. And she said her husband was making her sell cornflakes. This girl was way too young to have a husband. We, you know, asked the further questions and found out that her family had essentially sold her to a much older man because they couldn't afford to feed her. And they were, you know, he was sleeping with her, and he was also forcing her to work to earn her way as his wife, right? So at that point, we actually started a new program inside of Match, and it's called Girls Be Girls, Not Mothers. Mm-hmm. And this program is meant to focus on your human right, which is the right to education. So we find girls who've been either sold to older husbands or just simply forced into, you know, sometimes it's blackmail, sometimes it's just coercion. I mean, they are children, right? It's fairly easy to coerce a child. And they're, you know, forced into these arranged marriages with men who are sometimes as much as five times as old as they are, right? And we find these kids and we convince the husband that we will pay them if they will allow separation, right? They're not allowed to live in the home anymore. They get the girl out of the home and get her back in school. And as long as she remains in school, remains separated from her husband, and remains unpregnant, right? She's not sleeping with him, then she can, the husband gets paid. Unfortunately, paying them is often the only way to get them out of that situation, because it is legal to be married to a child bride in those countries. So what he's doing is not illegal, and the best we can do is essentially bribe them to stop being evil. So it is a horrible situation, but what I'm really proud of is that very first girl who we found wandering the streets selling cornflakes is now in her, what they call secondary school, which is a bit like high school here in the US. And she is on a fast track to become a nurse. She is very happy. She has no children as of yet. She is technically married to the man, but they are estranged at this point. She's, you know, built up her own emotional defenses against the situation she's in. And she's very excited to be going to university in a couple of years and becoming a nurse.
That's awesome. And that incredible life change. And for us over here, it's hard to imagine that. But for them, that's customary. And you know, I know you seek to change that, and we seek to change that as well. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to tell you a little bit about the work that we do in Kenya through Mercy's Light Family. Stay tuned.
Why become a sponsor at Mercy's Light Family? Sponsors at Mercy's Light Family are ending sex trafficking. They are healing girls physically, emotionally, spiritually, and financially to put them back on their feet in just 3 short years for themselves and their babies to be self-sustaining. That's what you get at Mercy's Light Family Sponsorship. In addition to that, you get a prayer card with the story of your girl or your baby so you can pray over them. You get behind the scenes access to be able to see day-to-day life in Kenya and what life is like for the girls at the house and how they're developing. You get that and so much more. Join us in sponsorship today.
Everybody, welcome back to the Christian Racketeers podcast, where we impart, inspire, influence, and impact your Christian nonprofit to skyrocket to the next level. I am your host, Shawnee Pinkasek, and I'm here with my friend and financial business consultant, Sarah Nicole Nadler. Sarah has her own nonprofit, and I'd love for you to go back, if you just tuned in, to listen to how she got started and where her journey is right now. So we're going to talk about, so Sarah, you've outlined your journey. And the struggles of a nonprofit owner are sometimes overwhelming because you need to get volunteers, you need to have the funding, you need to have the organizational systems. People get overwhelmed with the idea of IRS paperwork. I mean, I have people come to me all the time, do you know how to do my IRS paperwork? I'm like, it's not as hard as you think. You're kind of overthinking it. So when you think of all of that, what is your biggest struggle in the nonprofit journey, because you handle it very well?
I think the biggest struggle I have now is, again, just my dream outpacing the time and funding that I have. Like, we've gotten to the point where we can consistently get funding. We've gotten to the point where we can consistently get volunteers, but my ambitions are always larger than what we're doing now. I'm always going, okay, where's the next 10x target? And luckily I have volunteers who think the same way, but even they sometimes go, okay, Sarah, like, give us a break now. So I have to sometimes remember that Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, even the Lord took 7 days to build the earth, right? So, like, I don't have to do everything today. It's all right to rest on Sundays and kind of give myself grace, I guess. But I do feel like I was sort of born with a fire underneath me. So I have to curb that sometimes and learn to monitor the heartbeat of my team. I think that's part of becoming a good leader, is knowing how to identify when your team needs a break and when you need to let off the steam a little bit.
Yeah. So when you talk about dreams for the future, what does that look like? Because I know you dream big. So does that look like schools built? Does that look like hospitals? What does that look like for you?
I mean, I'll be honest with you, Shani, the 30 basic human rights as written in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations states that we have a right to a fair and free world. So I'm going to go there and say that that's actually my goal. It's not just the schools. It's not just the hospitals. It's not just the changed laws. It's a fair and free world. And do I expect that that's possible within my lifetime? No, which is why I'm building a nonprofit that I hope I have built correctly so that it will last much longer than me, because I think that the legacy I want to leave behind is that there is a road to a fair and free world. And that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to pave a road that other probably much greater people than I will then walk to actually arrive at a fair and free world.
So what has been, so we talked about the girl with the cornflakes, which I cannot even fathom that story. What's been your biggest success story that you've seen?
So I think I want to talk about one of my volunteers as one of my greatest success stories. So I connected with Thomas Fede in late 2018. As I said, this whole thing had just exploded. I was working frantically. I was working 40 hours for my business, or not my business, for my job at the time as a business consultant. Mm-hmm. And I was also doing 300 plus hours that year as a volunteer in my own community. And one day I pressed play on an ad to promote our nonprofit work. And it accidentally, instead of having the audience be or Portland, Oregon, I accidentally pressed go on an ad that was worldwide.
I had done
suddenly.
That. Yeah.
Have you really? Yeah. I thought at first, like, oh man, what a waste of my ad budget, right? But ironically, it ended up being the greatest mistake I have ever made in my life. And I'm sure that someone meant it to be that way. But he definitely, I think, moved my finger that day. But what was interesting was I began to be flooded by messages from, as I said, people all around the world who were grabbing a copy of my book online, reading it digitally, and going, yes, my kids need this. My school needs this. My college needs this, right? Like all around the world. And I was overwhelmed by it, honestly. And one person reached out to me, and that was Thomas Fede. He is an award-winning movie director and comedian in his country. He had a YouTube channel at the time, and I went to watch this YouTube channel. It was in another language. I can't speak the language of Sierra Leone. And I was struck by how powerful of a person it takes to start a comedy channel in the fifth most impoverished country in the world, right? Like when you're living in that abject of poverty, what is there to laugh about? You know, like, just think about that for a second. Like, I can go to a comedy show because my life is comfortable, and I can laugh because I live a life of ease in a lot of ways, right? Not to say I don't have my own problems, but they are first world problems.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who, despite being a famous actor and movie director in his country, was still homeless most of the time, right? He still lived in poverty a lot of the time. And yet he was laughing, and he was making hundreds of thousands of other people laugh. And I went, wow, I want that guy. I want to connect with him. And so we did, we ended up connecting up. And as a result of our work together, because of the reputation he has in his country, and also throughout West Africa, his movies are well known. Because of his name, we were able to explode across West Africa. And just get our booklets into the hands of tens of thousands of kids within a very short time. And so we've consistently done tens of thousands of booklets into hands every year since then. And Thomas is actually coming in about a week to the US for the first time to visit us here on the farm. And he'll be staying for a month and we're going to tour around Kansas City together. So that is, I think, one of my greatest successes is having made a friend who I know will be a friend forever.
Yeah. And Thomas is pretty incredible. We got to meet him briefly on the webinar that we did with Sarah. So with Thomas coming, what does that look like? Are you going to talk about plans for the future? I can imagine his reaction when he first gets to the U.S. because being very much different. But I also want to say laughter is good medicine. And the fact that he has so much joy in the midst of all of that says a lot, because it's not easy to have joy in the midst of that much heartache. And wouldn't you agree that that speaks volumes for who he is as a person and just how he's able to make the best of impossible situations?
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, he has become my problem solver on the ground. He runs all of our West Africa chapters by himself, right? He has a team that he is who volunteer for him, but he really is my go-to guy for everything on the ground. And I don't think a fraction of what we've accomplished would have been possible without him. He is really the man who I want to put on the face of everything we do, because I think too often I get, the accolades for things that he has done. So I'm constantly, he and I, we have this joke going back and forth where he's like, Sarah, I'm so, impressed by the Nadlers and what you guys do. And I'm like, Thomas, what are you talking about? Nothing we do would be possible without you. So I'm excited because this visit for him, obviously we're paying to have him come out here. He's going to stay with us in our home. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just an acknowledgement of everything he's done. I want him to take a month off and really enjoy being here. He has expressed how terrified he is of how cold it is in Kansas. So we're going to prove to him that snow doesn't hurt him. and we're just going to have a really good time. And yes, there will definitely be planning sessions for the next 10 years. What are we going to accomplish? Where do we want to go from here? And really just trying to make sure that I have a clear picture of what is needed on the ground for him. And he has a better picture of what we're doing on this end. Because one thing we have consistently struggled with is finding volunteers here in the US who are as dedicated as the volunteers we have in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I know that partly that is because Americans are quite comfortable, a lot of them, right? And so it's easy to say that we don't have time to volunteer. But of course, that's not true. And I think that he's a great example of what can be done with very, very little time and very, very little money. And so I'm hoping that we have a few public speaking engagements lined up for him while he's here. And he's very excited to kind of try to help us get a Kansas City chapter to be even a fraction as productive as what we have in Sierra Leone.
So when you talk about appreciation for volunteers, what does that look like? How can a starting nonprofit owner show appreciation besides a thank you to your volunteers? Because your volunteers really are the backbone of what you do. They keep you going when you don't have the energy to.
Yeah, I will say I have found so much about, I've learned so much about leadership through my nonprofit. One thing that I used to believe was that just like giving someone a shout out or giving them a public acknowledgement was enough. And then I started to notice that several of my volunteers are complete introverts and they despise being called out in front of everyone. And so I will say that I think the greatest advice I could give to a new nonprofit leader is get to know your team. Right? Like at this point, I have enough volunteers. I literally have to keep a spreadsheet. So I have a spreadsheet that has everybody's name, their contact information. and then what they like, something to remind me of what they're into, right? So some of them, the acknowledgement I give them is a very private one. And it's a thank you so much. It's a personal letter that's written to them. Sometimes, especially for my volunteers in Africa, they love being shouted out in front of everyone. They think that they're famous in the US if I say something about them, right? So to them, that's like the biggest deal. And so I'll record a video of me mentioning their name, and I'll post it on my Facebook page, and I'll, you know, say what they got done. And then I'll say, thank you so much for what you're doing. We're all behind you, you know, that kind of messaging. Mm-hmm. And I'll tag them on Facebook, and they just go wild for that, right? So it's getting to know each individual volunteer and what they want. And one thing I will say I've learned is that you cannot have more than 7 direct juniors, right? I have thousands of volunteers, but not all of them report directly to me. I only have about 4 or 5 who'd report directly to me. And then each of them has about 4 or 5 who report directly to them. And then, right, it goes, and it filters out from there. Yeah. And I think that that's very important, is having a structure in place so that you don't have thousands of volunteers who are all complaining about the fact that you didn't personally acknowledge them.
Yeah, well, because as your nonprofit goes, that gets, you know, even more overwhelming, and you cannot be the point person for every volunteer. That's why having people to help you is so key, and having those systems in place is also very key, like Sarah said. So you've got someone who's going to start a nonprofit. What's your biggest piece of advice from the journey you've been on?
You know, I would actually say my biggest piece of advice is do the work yourself first, like actually get some results in the mission that you're trying to accomplish, and do that first. Cause that will, one, prove to you it can be done by anyone. Right. And it will, two, it will give you the accolades you need to get your volunteers really fired up. Right. It's difficult to start a nonprofit where you're like, hey, I have this dream. I've never accomplished anything on this subject, but why don't you give me money and give me your time and we'll see if we can do it. Very few people are going to want to donate in that scenario. Very few people are going to want to volunteer much time in that scenario. So you're much better off starting small and picking one goal that you know you can accomplish and accomplishing it yourself personally or with a few family and friends. And once you've gotten that done, now turn around and say, hey, look, I've got a story to tell of how I accomplish XYZ. Why don't you donate? Why don't you volunteer? And we can go do 10 times as much. And just, you know, start at grassroots at first.
Yeah, grassroots is good.
I left my legal career to pursue a higher calling. What changes are you willing to make? My name is Carrie Reichartz, and I'm a Rising Star Lawyer by the Milwaukee Magazine. And I left my rising legal career to make a difference in the world of girls in Kenya. The women I met forever changed my life. I returned to my job and I realized it no longer served me. I knew he had something bigger in store for me. I was called to serve others. So I left my law to begin my own business. I founded 2 nonprofits, Operation Give Hope and Infinitely More Life. I also began teaching women who are overwhelmed trying to start and grow their nonprofit, Ministries of Pride.
My first nonprofit, Operation Give Hope, tackles systematic spiritual, emotional, and financial poverty afflicting young mothers in Mombasa, Kenya, and helps sex trafficking victims heal. My second nonprofit, Infinitely More Life, operates globally and helps people recognize and reconcile life traumas by working with Christ. I have assisted hundreds in starting their own domestic and international nonprofits.
Are you ready to leave behind the fear and doubt holding you back from starting the nonprofit God has called you to? Join the 8-week Christian Rocketeer Nonprofit Startup Certification. Remember, you are not leaving a career or a comfortable life. You are gaining purpose, passion, mission, and you will be changing the world. Join us today.
What's been your biggest takeaway from the journey so far? Is it serving first? Because you started off serving to get to where you are in your nonprofit. Is it just find a need?
I think my biggest takeaway has been humility. Realizing that as productive as I think we've been, there's a lot more that needs to be done, right? Realizing as large as we've gotten, we are a drop in the bucket for planet Earth, right? There are 8 billion people on this planet, and a good number of them live in poverty. A good number of them are in situations that I would consider to be a violation of human rights. Yeah. and that they would consider to be a violation of human rights, which is more important than what I think. And I think humility is really the thing that I've learned the most. It's been my biggest takeaway, is to stay humble. And I might talk about myself, I might talk about what we've accomplished, but I only talk about it because it allows us to do more work of that nature. It's not about me, and it never has been, and I don't think it ever will be. You know, I'm not out to win awards. If our nonprofit wins awards, it's only because of the work that my volunteers have done and the funding that our sponsors have given us, right? And I think that if you can accomplish this much without becoming egocentric, that I think you're doing okay.
Yeah. And keeping that in check too, that humility is so key, because it's not you. It's God working through you that helps you be able to do the work that he's called you to do. And when you see that, that's even bigger. So, all right. Well, where can people connect with? I know we can connect with you at your website. So that is sarahnicolenadler.com. But nonprofit wise, where can they connect to donate?
I have found that when I put my face on my nonprofit, it does get more interest, only because people know I'm a real person, right? Mm-hmm. So our website is still actually on my website. It's sarahnicolenadler.com/help. So if you go to sarahnicolenadler.com/help, you can learn about Match. You can learn about the programs we have and the opportunities to volunteer and the opportunities to give. And that's the best place. I'm also all over Facebook. I'm a daily Facebook user, so you can feel free to find me there, Sarah Nicole Nadler, and I would be happy to connect with you.
Yeah, and if you need business advice, she's the perfect person for that as well. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Christian Marketeers Podcast. We will see you again next week. And also, if you need coaches, check out christianmarketeers.com. Have a great day.